Brethren, when I was growing up, we actually had several different gardens, and they weren't necessarily the little small gardens that a lot of people have, but they weren't the big farm gardens, but they were sufficiently large enough that there was a lot of work to be done. And because child labor laws were not in effect, at least in that part of the South, we got to work our fingers to the bone, whether it was fertilizing or pulling up weeds and whatnot, and it always seemed like an endless task, and it was arduous, and it was indeed work. But because we worked, there was food that grew out of it. We got to see what came from all of our labor. And of all the food that we grew, I think tomatoes were my favorite. And I don't know exactly why it was, other than the fact it was just free food. I think you look at kind of the potatoes, and they're hidden underground, and then once you dig them up, you can't really eat them. You got to clean them, and then you still have to go cook them. They're really not, you can't do that. And you look at the carrots, and the carrots, same thing. They're in the ground. You can pull them out, but you still got to go clean them up, and before you can eat them. And I looked at the corn, and the corn had to be shucked, and it had to be cooked before you could do that. And the cantaloupe had to be peeled, and all these things. But the tomato, you just looked at it, and you knew when it was done. I mean, you learned for sure. You didn't, if you were, I guess, silly enough to go and try a green one, you'd find out that the green ones weren't ready, not to be eaten. And as they changed their color, as they grew to this great, beautiful, lush, red, ripe tomato, you may have tried a few along the way and realized that, okay, well, this is the one that I want. And so you could go and eat them, and they're not like the tomatoes that we get today. I don't know what exactly they do with them. They gas them so that they can make them here. They pick them early so that they don't get unripe. These were just, they were like fruit. I know there may be a debate as to whether tomato is a fruit or a vegetable, but they're either the best tasting vegetable or one of the worst tasting fruits. But it was, nonetheless, it was something that you just pick off the vine, and you knew when it was ready, and it was tasty. But the best one on the plant, the best one on the row of all the tomato plants, I wasn't allowed to eat. And of course, that's a little bit rough. It was a bit of a sacrifice, because once you became knowledgeable on which ones were the best ones, which one were the tasty ones, the big ones, they would almost be a meal in of themselves. There was that one that we couldn't eat. And the reason that we couldn't eat was because it had to be set aside, because that was going to be the seed for next year. So another one of the amazing things about the tomato plants that was just fascinating to me as a kid was they had the little cherry tomatoes. Of course, you can just pop those straight into your mouth and you eat the whole thing at once. But if you took the seeds from the little cherry tomatoes and planted them again the next year, they'd come up and be cherry tomatoes next year. And I thought that was absolutely fascinating. But the big, luscious, beautiful, the one that was actually beautifully designed and molded, it wasn't one of these craggy ones that was going out every which way, that was the one that we saved. And the reason was is that that was the one that we wanted to plant for next year. So we get that tomato, you cut it up, and you take all the seeds out, and then you'd end up washing them and drying them out and saving them for next year. So we didn't get to eat that best one, but we kept that one aside because we wanted this for next year. We're looking ahead to the future, and we knew that if we took this one, at least this one, or more if necessary, and the more that we did, the bigger the crop could be, both in quantity and in quality. So the reason that we took the seeds out of this one, this best one, was so that we were looking ahead to the future and what we were going to do with it. And we see this principle in 2 Corinthians 9 and verse 6. 2 Corinthians 9 and verse 6. Says, "But this I say, he who sows sparingly will also reap sparingly, and he who sows bountifully will also reap bountifully. So when we sow in quantity and in quality, we will reap in kind." Today, as I look around, we are all very richly blessed. We have our needs met. We do not want for food. We do not want for a roof over our head or clothes on our back. We have also not only our needs met, but we have many of our wants met. I look just in my basement and see that it is jam-packed, pressed together, and overflowing. And it seems like each year, you know, we do a clean out once or twice a year, and all this stuff, you know, comes out, and we will either put it on Craigslist, or we'll just go to Goodwill or someplace with it like that. But it's just, you know, where does this stuff just keep coming from? And we just have tons and tons of it. And so we, as a nation, as a church even, are incredibly blessed with just material goods. We do not lack, really, for anything. Of course, as I look around too, I see that we are spiritually blessed. We have the knowledge of the truth and the blessings that come with that now, as well as the ones that we look forward to in the future, hopefully the very near future. Brethren, there were those that came before us, and they gave so that we, in one way or the other, may have much of the opportunity that we have today. They gave their best. And because of the tithes and the offerings that went towards preaching the gospel, towards feeding the flock, like it does today, by God calling us and the gospel going out and being taught in church services and having literature to read and even our own study of our own Bible, we are where we are at today. 2 Corinthians 9, verse 7, the next verse, says, "So let each one give as he purposes in his heart, not grudgingly or of necessity, for God loves a cheerful giver." What is, then, this purpose? What is this purpose in our heart? Do we have the purpose in our heart? Brethren, now we have the chance to do the same thing that those who came before us did. We can take from these physical blessings that we have, that God gave to us. He doesn't ask for them all back, but just some. And we get to use it for a spiritual purpose. The spiritual message that we have all benefited from, we now have the chance to facilitate it going out to others so that they may benefit from it. We can share it with them, and thus we can help to fulfill the commission of the church. We can do our part in the work by doing this. Brethren, what an incredible and wonderful occasion this is today to help and aid in doing the work of God by giving the best that we can.